time on the show, scary comics for kids,
digitally drawing the natural way,
and slow zombies or fast zombies. All this and more on Comics Are Great. It's Comics Great, the visual storytelling show recorded live every other Wednesday at the Ann Arbor District Library in lovely downtown Ann Arbor, Michigan. Comics.aadl.org. It just happens to be the comics nexus of the Midwest. Can I say that? Yeah, the guys in the control room are nodding. My name is Jersey Droz, cartoonist and teaching artist, and this is the show where we talk about comics, comics lifestyle, what it takes to make comics, all the things that go into that, like publishing, self-publishing, distributing your content on the web, collecting your stuff in print and selling it to people going to shows, all sorts of things that all lead up to this visual storytelling medium that we love so much. And before we kick into the full discussion, I want to say this special live episode has a contest involved. Later on during the episode, you're going to find out how to get a free pre-pub copy of Raina Telgemeier's drama. So pay attention. We'll be doing a break in the show a little bit later on to tell you how to do that. But the most important thing I got to get to right now is I got to talk to this guy named Eric Orchard of ericorchard.blogspot.com. Inky Bat on Twitter, and gosh, you're on the Google Plus and the Facebook and Blogger, Tumblr, any place where there's an internet, there's you, it seems.
I have a compulsive personality. I treat the internet the same way I treat art supplies. I'll just grab whatever's off the shelf.
I'm the same way. Like, whenever I find out about a new service, I usually dive in just to grab the username in case it takes off, you know? So I was, you know, just tried out Mobily the other day and was sorely disappointed, and I'm very angry about what my experience happened with that, but it could be my fault. Yes. I don't know. But anyway, so you know, let's go through your credits real quick here, Eric. Gosh, you were in the nursery rhyme comics.
I was. What an honor that was. That was super cool. That was a big shock to me. The editor Chris got a hold of me and said, "Do you want to be a part of this?" And when I saw, like, you know, it involved like Jules Pfeiffer, Jaime Hernandez, and like just people I grew up reading, I was bowled over. So I jumped at the chance to do that. That was such a great opportunity. And, you know, I love working with First Second, you know, those people are wonderful.
It's the Pixar of comics. I've said that many, many times. You know, everything they put out is amazing.
It's quality every time, you know. And it's actually been nominated for an Eisner, so that's nice. This is my first time being associated with anything Eisner-ish, you know? So that's I'm really happy about that.
Oh, congratulations for that. That's awesome. I mean, it's a great-looking book. It's an awesome book with a lot of great pieces in it.
Let's see.
You also do children's books. Terrible,
that's how I started.
Terrible, Horrible, Smelly Pirate, Anything But Hank.
Yes.
All available on Amazon. Eric Closter in the chat will be no doubt grabbing links to those things. Maddie Kettle. Saturday Morning Webtoons. Tell us about this. There's another thing you're involved with.
Oh, I'm getting tired just listening to this. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff, isn't it? And I'm always offering my services elsewhere. I got to slow down. Comics are so exciting and so much fun to be involved with. You just want to grab at everything. And,
yeah.
You know, it's one of those things you learn. You learn to start saying no after a while.
You have to. It's a self-preservation mechanism, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm a stay-at-home dad too, so I've got all those sort of, I got to balance things. Got to learn how to juggle.
Otherwise, you're going to be doing the Cats in the Cradle and the Silver Spoon song someday.
Exactly.
But you're right. Brandon Dayton of BrandonDayton.com posted on Twitter the other day, and this was a painful truth that I think we all have to face, is that, like, if you want to tell a lot of stories really fast, don't get into comics, because it's so labor-intensive, and yet it's so exciting that it's really easy to find yourself suddenly spread really, really thin. I've run into this many times. Now, I'm not saying that about you. I'm saying this specifically about myself, but man, you've been all over the map here. Also, I want to talk about Saturday Morning Webtoons real quick, because this is another neat thing that you've been involved with. Now, you're not doing this all yourself, thank goodness.
No. This is something that Jay Torres dreamed up. And Jay lives not that far from me, and we've been friends for the last couple of years. I love his work. It's actually funny. I met him 10, 12 years ago at Strange Adventures. He was doing a signing tour with Jay Bone, and I was as yet unpublished. And he was just a really cool guy, and I really liked him. And we've been in touch a lot lately, and he wanted to work with me. And so he asked me to do these two-line joke sort of comics with him on Saturday Morning Webtoons. So I jumped at the chance. It's been really fun. And the talent on there is amazing. I didn't realize who's going to be involved. So it's like, you know, it's like Jack Brilio and Jay Bone and Andy Watson, people whose work I love. So it's been, you know, pretty cool. Yeah.
That is awesome. And that's a comic strip that updates every Saturday with a bunch of kid-friendly, fun cartoons, right? So it's like
exactly.
So it's like Saturday morning cartoons, but you know, for the internet generation, right?
That's it. Yeah, yeah. And you know, it's got a wide readership. It keeps growing, and it's a lot of fun. So yeah, I look forward to doing that every week.
And so, okay, so you've got your foot in the traditional publishing world, in the web comics world, but then you also do mini comics on top of all this other stuff. So, you got harryandsilvio.blogspot.com where people can get actual, like, good old-fashioned black and white stapled mini comics.
Right here.
Oh, hold that up. Let's see that. I want to, so people can get it at home. Harry and Silvio and the Girl in the Purple Boat. There's a Facebook page for this, too, is there not?
As I started a fan page for that, it's been a really popular comic. I sent it to Top Shelf, and they're publishing it as a collection, a one long story. So that's coming out next year.
Oh, awesome! So okay, now you're involved with First, Second, and Top Shelf. Those are both no small potatoes when it comes to the world of non superhero comics, right?
Yeah. I can definitely say my dreams have all come true in the comics world. It's definitely beyond my expectations so far. Yeah.
Well, good for you. But then, okay, so now we got to talk about this. This is where I want to really drive a lot of the conversation today.
Yeah.
So that, you released the cover just this afternoon, or this morning, rather.
Yes.
For the new book you're doing, Marrow Bones. Okay,
yes.
So we got the traditional publishing, got the mini comics, got the web comics. Now you're doing PDF comics.
Mm-hmm.
Just try to stop this guy, everybody. Marrow Bones can be found on your blog spot, right? EricOrchard.blogspot.
Yeah, I'm going to take it to Drive Through Comics as well. And hopefully, you know, like Apple and stuff down the road. But well, after I have a few issues out, I wanted to start getting it into more shops, storefronts.
So this is a personal project, yes?
It is. It's stories that I've been collecting for about, 20 years, like since I was a little kid, and 30 years, and really wanted to tell. And, publishing works so slowly. Like, you have an idea, you present it, and, it goes through the editing process, and it could take years for a book to come out. So this is just my way of just getting more material out there and being more visible.
Mm-hmm.
And telling the stories I really want to tell, so that's it.
Well, that's cool to hear too, is that, sometimes publishing, being published is awesome, right? I mean, I'm sure you'll back me up on that statement.
Oh, yeah.
But also, as you pointed out, it's a long process too. And also when editorial voices get into the mix, it can become, friction can come out of that. Not necessarily bad friction, but friction comes out of that, which slows down the whole machine because everybody wants to make the project the best thing it can be. But there's something liberating about just diving in and doing exactly the thing that you want to do, right? And not have to answer to anybody. But, the thing about Marrow Bones is this is a scary comic for kids. This is a kid's horror comic. And I want to talk about that quite a bit with you. But before we go into the whole talking about making scary comics for kids and what that means, I wonder if you tell us a little bit about the premise of Marrow Bones so people can go to the site and check it out today.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's about this young girl, probably about 11, I think, 11, 10, 11, 12, around that age. Her name's Nora, and she's basically been abandoned by her parents at this school called the Hillgrove School for Haunted Children, which is this awful place where they take children who are vampires, werewolves, can see ghosts, etc., and try to, get it out of them. And so she's there for a while, and then she's rescued by her uncle, Barnaby, and taken to this other world called Marrow Bones. Barnaby happens to be a werewolf who also is an innkeeper, and she works at the inn. So she becomes this sort of adventurer in this secondary world called Marrow Bones, which is this big, sprawling swamp filled with monsters and creatures. And she becomes sort of this protective character in this other world, and it's about her trying to find home and family after being rejected by her own family, and in this new place that's very strange and very creepy
and sometimes dangerous.
It's very dangerous. Which is something you can't really. I didn't want to give that to a traditional publisher because marketing that would be a pain, you know? So I thought, let's do this really weird stuff on my own. And so that's the premise of Marrow Bones. It's about the hero is Nora, and she basically looks after monsters and weirdos in a swamp in another world.
Now, it's always dangerous to try to describe somebody's style.
Yeah.
What's that?
I've had people describe it better than that.
Oh, no. I mean, I was going to try to describe the art for those who are just listening and not actually watching.
Because
the guys in the production were actually pulling up artwork and showing your work while you're talking about it, which is awesome.
Oh, okay.
And that's why people should watch the video, actually, than listen to the audio. Although the audio is cool, too. Cute scary, you know? It's scary, but it's not threatening scary. It's the kind of like fun creepy, if that makes any sense.
I like cute stuff. I'm really attracted to cute art. So
but at the same time, it's still creepy, right? It's like when, you know, in the new book that's coming out, and you said it's going to be out next week at the time of this recording. It's Oliver's Tomb. Is that the name of the book? Yeah.
That's the name of the book, yeah.
I mean, there's some really scary stuff with the ghoul that happens in there. And as we all know what ghouls are and what ghouls do, you know, it's not a pleasant thing. So, you know, it's still creepy. But, you know, I want to talk about, like, specific art stuff in a second, but maybe start a little bit higher up.
Yeah.
I'm a guy who does, you know, I stay strictly PG-13 and under in my work, and that's just a taste thing. That's the kind of entertainment I like, and that's the kind of stuff I like to make. But I do love scary movies, but very specific kinds of scary movies, and I'm wondering if you could speak to this, is that, like, I can't sit through Saw. Watching,
say that. Yeah, I'm the same. Yeah, absolutely.
Watching people get tortured by a really sick and deranged guy. I mean, I'm not saying that people who watch that are sick and deranged. You know, there's all kinds of thrills of horrification, but I just personally can't sit through that. But movies about monsters and the devil, like The Prince of Darkness by John Carpenter, is one of my favorite horror films. And
that's
a great movie. Alice Cooper as a zombie. How does it get any better than that? But, you know, I try to explain this to people. I'm like, well, how can you sit through that? Because there's some gross stuff that happens in that. I'm like, well, but it's like elevated. It's like superhero horror because it's so elevated and so detached from real life. It's like watching the gods do battle, but with monsters. Is that where you come from when you're doing stuff like this?
I think so. I think for me, when I think of horror, you know, I think of mood more than anything. So, you know, the act of, you know, like, the, you know, the buckets of gore and the dismemberments aren't that interesting to me. But capturing a certain type of mood or feeling is really interesting to me. Like, I was listening to an interview with Christopher Lee, who played Dracula in the Hammer horror films. And he said that he never considered the Hammer movies to be horror. He always considered them to be fantasy because you're entering a different world and with different rules. And it was about the atmosphere in that world. And to me, that's really interesting. I'm not at all interested in sort of, you know, I feel bad but it's like, it's like Halloween is a great movie.
Yeah.
But it ruined everything, you know. that brought in the killing the virgins and the teenage, you know. And I think a lot of people recognize that was sort of the beginning of the end. Who did Halloween again?
Wasn't that Carpenter who did the first
was that
one?
Carpenter. I was going to say Carpenter, but
yeah,
it's getting mixed up. And I think even Carpenter recognizes that was sort of when it all became repetitive and boring and just sort of not interesting. And I think I read a lot of, like, I'm a big fan of Victorian ghost stories as well. And that's really my starting point. My favorite authors are a lot of my favorite authors write short fiction in the Victorian era, like M.R. James, Sheridan Le Fanu. Like, these guys were writing these awesome, creepy stories that were just brilliant concepts, wonderful aesthetic, just perfect. And it's a world away of what you would think of as horror. I think there's a, you know, I mean, there's a bit of it coming back, you know, with Hammer Studios coming back and doing things like, you know, the Woman in Black and Let the White Right One In. And then, you know, the movie The Others with Nicole Kidman, that sort of touches on that sort of thing as well. Okay. So, and I'm also really influenced by Mike Mignola in this sense, because he does that sort of thing really well too, where, you know, it's not about the gore. It's about the atmosphere and building a world, especially in the Hellboy books.
Yeah. The Hellboy books are fantastic for that. And the Hellboy movies are actually pretty darn good. They did an amazing job of capturing really scary stuff, but in a way that didn't feel exploitive and distasteful. You know, there's people getting mauled by terrible monsters, but it feels like it has that detachment and it has that mood. So mood, that's interesting that you talk so much about that, because I'm wondering with the style that you choose, if that's what's hot on your mind, because when I'm looking at Marrow Bones, I wrote this down as I was reading it. It's like, you know, really richly textured line art, but then a very limited color palette. And the illustrations, like the poses of the characters and the shots you choose, came across as very soft-spoken, very understated almost, you know? It's like when a monster jumps out in Marrow Bones, it's not this crazy Jack Kirby speed lines all over the place, you know, and popping out of the panel or anything like that. It feels very quiet and eerie in a way. Does that make sense? Does that sound fair to describe your work?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely accurate. It probably goes to the kind of stories, comics I read, which, like, I love Kirby, but I mean, I grew up reading, like, you know, Love and Rockets and you know, Spiegelman and you know, like, stuff that wasn't over the top, that was sort of had that sort of, the storytelling was very, you know, it was quiet. I like that. That's a good description. I think that's really accurate. It's how I feel about my work. And I also feel like it's not me. And if I started doing Kirby, you know, speed lines and you know, people do that so well. Like, Mignola does that well. I don't need to do that. Other people do it so well. So I'm going to do something different and just have a quieter approach. And I think that appeals to some people. So I think I'm doing it right. It's not like, you know, I don't see it as an oversight. I see it as a sort of intentional and truthful way to approach it, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is something that I think all artists struggle with when they're creating their work. When I say work, I mean like the body of work over their lifetime, is figuring out what is it that is intrinsically me about this? How do you find your voice? That kind of thing, right? For sure. And then all of these, well, it's better nowadays, but in the old days when there were like very few how to draw comics books, there was a propensity for, well, this is the way to do it, kid. And so when I wasn't doing it that way, I was like, why am I doing this wrong? Why am I doing this? And then, it turns out that I was just heading in a different direction than what that particular book was trying to teach me. So, yeah, I mean, finding your voice is super, super important. But I was making that comparison mostly just as like a very vivid way to describe how unique your work feels. Not to say that, well, you're not meeting the Kirby standard. I got my yardstick here.
I totally know what you were saying. I was just trying to go into a bit of my thinking behind it as well. Because, you know, I have been fairly thoughtful about that. But, you know, comics are such a complex thing that it's sort of like, it's almost like a reciprocity failure. You can only do so much, and the end result is going to surprise you. So some of that stuff you don't notice till after, and then you try to enhance it. You know, it's like, oh, this is what the mood feels like. In book two, I'm going to try to push this a little more because, you know, I discovered it through the process in book one. So, yeah.
So, okay, I've got a big important question to ask you. But before I go into that, because the reason I was also noticing this is that in my work, one of the things I try to focus on, not to make this about me, but just for comparison's sake, is that I try to focus on capturing energy as much as I can. So, like, anybody who's ever seen my warm-up sketches, it always features a laser and an explosion, because that's what's going on in my head all the time. I like that stuff. And it's always trying to find just the right frame in the movement to capture that sense of energy and kinetic stuff. So, years ago, I tried doing a scary moment in a story, as scary as I could do at any rate. And I tried drawing the monster, you know, in a frightening way, but it came across as being like almost It was just too over the top. It didn't feel like that frightening coiled dog about to get you. It felt more like this slobbering thing in your face. It almost came across as like it crossed the threshold of scary into goofy. And so I was just wondering if there was like a rule of thumb, and I don't want to say this as an application for every artist, but I'm just wondering if, like, you know, when you're trying to be creepy, perhaps you do have to tone back some of the movement, which leads to my big question. Lumbering zombies or running zombies?
Lumbering, which some people might disagree with. I mean, 28 Days Later is awesome, and that's scary. And actually, I love how the zombies move, or how the vampires move in 30 Days of Night. But yeah, I like lumbering better.
Yeah.
You know, it's but you know, I'm a Romero fan. I think that's the gold standard of zombies for me.
No, you know, the way I've always described it to my friends is that with lumbering zombies, there's the inevitable dread. It can't get better. It can't, because no matter how fast you run, you're going to get tired. They're not. And it's inevitable. And it's like, as I remember watching The Omen with my wife, and she was like, turn it off. And I was like, whoa, what's the big deal? And she's like, it's like, I can see that this is not going to end well. It's too dreadful. The dread is too heavy on this film. I'm like, that's why the film is interesting. She's like, yeah, but it's too much for me. You know, and I think that's what I like about the lumbering zombie is that heavy dread that is never always present. It's always present, but it's never on screen necessarily.
Yeah.
Whereas with running zombies, it's more like wild animals. And yeah, wild animals are scary. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different type of fear. It's, you know, one fear is like that creeping, crawling fear that leaves you scared when you turn off the lights at night. The other kind is the animal fear is the kind you can leave behind. You know, it's like, oh yeah, wolf, that's fine. You know, like, or a bear. Yeah. Someone's not going to stay up at night too worried about that, you know, unless you live in Alaska in a paper house. But it's sort of like, it's not the kind of thing that's going to stick with you like a creeping fear, I feel.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's like a wild animal activates fight or flight response.
Small brain, yeah.
Yeah, and then the zombies slowly just bumping into your house until there's enough of them to push their way in is like this ever-present, heavy, just leaded dread.
I'll be pretentious and call it a more intellectual fear.
Oh, look at that. Well, you get you were published by First Seconds, so you get to say that. And you're Canadian, so everybody knows that you mean well. Okay, well, we're closing in on the halfway point, so this is where I'm going to take a break for a second from talking about zombies and bears attacking you. I'm talking about something a little bit more lighthearted. Okay, in my hands, everybody, in my hand, is Raina Telgemeier's pre-pub advanced reader's copy of the book, her upcoming book, coming out, I think, September, Raina? You're in the chat, am I right? This coming out in this fall? This book, I finished it this last weekend, and I can tell you that I think it's going to be one of the most important and talked about books of the year. This is Eisner material, without a doubt. It's so emotionally engaging. The story is it's another rite of passage story about a young girl who gets involved in the theater department in seventh grade, and it's all that middle school transformation stuff that happens. There's some wonderful, wonderful character twists and plot twists, and it's sandwiched in this great metaphor of a theater production. So the curtain opens at the beginning, the characters walk onto the stage, the story begins, there's an intermission at just the right point where there should be an intermission, and then it closes with the curtain falling and the lights going down. Okay, so you need to read this book. You will not be sorry if you read this book. And Raina's going to give away a free copy. If you go to the Twitters right now, oh, it comes out September 1st. Thank you, Raina. If you go to the Twitters right now and type a message with the hashtag DramaCAG for Comics Are Great. So hashtag DramaCAG, Comics Are Great. In a half hour, we're going to announce the winner of this. Now, you can just type hashtag DramaCAG in the chat, but here's where you could do me a solid, is if you want to make me happy, you could say, Raina Telgemeier is a national treasure, hashtag DramaCAG, or drama is definitely the read of the year. Anybody who cares about comics, anybody who has young people in their life should buy this book. And I created a short link that you can use in the post. It is, let's see, where did I put it? It is comicsaregreat.com/drama. That'll take you to the pre-order page. So you could point at that. That would be helpful. You know, point to comicsaregreat.com/drama. And then use the hashtag drama CAG. And then Rain is going to randomly select one of those people to, at the end of the show to give a copy, a pre-pub copy of this book. Now it is a pre-pub, so only part of it is in color. Let's see if I can do that. There we go. And the rest is in black and white because it is, you know, it's just a proof copy for advanced readers. But don't let that stop you. It's an amazing, amazing book. You will not be sorry. So everybody go do that right now. While you listen to me and Eric continue to talk about some of this awesome comic stuff. So thank you, Raina Telgemeier of GoRaina.com for helping me out with this contest. Okay, Eric, you still there?
Yeah, still here.
Okay. Yeah, your video froze for some reason, but hopefully it'll kick back in.
Okay. Love Raina's work, by the way. Big, big fan.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, she is a force of nature. One of the things I told her the other day when I was talking to her was that she deals with some very important up-to-date issues that kids are facing, and she does it with such ninja-like deftness.
So yes.
It's amazing. It's a fantastic book, one of the best books I've read in years. So you know what? I want to talk a little bit more about this Marrow Bones book. So the book comes out next week, so only a few days after this episode is collected.
Monday.
Say that again?
Mm-hmm. I'm hoping Monday.
Because you spent a long time on that cover. I want to talk about that cover. You posted that today, and that was at ericorchard.blogspot.com and also on Google Plus, which I want to talk about a little bit in a second. You work on the Cintiq, yes?
I do. I work a lot on the Cintiq. I love it. It's my tool of choice right now when not working traditional.
You got the big one that's on like the hinge that can move around like an art table kind of dealy.
Yeah. Here, look. Here it is.
Oh, cool. We actually get to see it.
Yeah.
So you're inking and painting digitally, but one of the things that I was really surprised when I saw that is that your work has kind of like a scratchboard effect look to it. Did you find it difficult to capture that digitally, or what's the trick to doing that?
I don't know. Like when I do kids' books, I work in gouache, and my sort of method for gouache has always been to go way too dark and then pull out the highlights using lighter colors. So it's just sort of natural for me when I pick up a new medium to continue that sort of process. So what I've been doing with Marrow Bones is I'm working in Manga Studio to do the line work, and then I take it to Photoshop to do the colors. So Manga Studio, I just dump blacks with the paint bucket, and then I'll etch into it afterwards.
Oh.
And that's a lot of what I'm doing. So I'm etching in with whites afterwards. And I also use a lot of pattern tools. You guys know Ray Frendon?
Yeah.
So Ray's done a lot of texture brushes, pattern brushes that aren't available through Manga Studio, but you can download them and use them. And I love Ray's pattern brushes. He's done a bunch that I use a lot. So it's a combination of etching into blacks, pattern brushes, and then I do all that in Manga Studio, and then I transfer it over to Photoshop. And once I'm in there, once again, I start hatching into it with color lines instead of black and white lines. So I continue that process of hatching and building up layer upon layer, and it's a compelling way for me to work. You know, it's sort of how I think if the old masters had some teaks, it's what they would do. They build up. They do that sort of patient, fun way of working that I love.
Yeah, it's like a sculpting almost.
Exactly. Yeah. That's how I treat it.
So I'm curious about how, like, if you could describe the way you look at things, because my style developed into a contour-based system of always really thinking about the outer contour and the body as shapes that are interacting. But my wife, on the other hand, Anne, is she's so adept at capturing color and texture. Like we could draw. We did this. We went on vacation once. We were both drawing the same tree, and with me, it just turned into this contour with a bunch of scratchy lines in the middle to try to futile attempt to represent the texture of the bark, but she zoomed right in on that bark. Did you find that the way you look at things changed when the more you started to work in this way of like sculpting shapes out with lines?
Yeah, I think so. Every medium I try, it's like when you close your eyes, you can still see yourself working in that medium. And I started doing, when I trained in oil paints in art college, and you know, every night I'd go to sleep seeing oil paint. There was, Charlie Harper, the illustrator, mid-century illustrator.
Yeah.
He talks about how people have, there's different types of people. Some people see detail and some people see shapes. And I think that's a significant, you know, separation of two different types of artists. Harper himself, he sees shapes. So he draws nature in these beautiful, designy kind of juxtaposition of shapes and colors that verge towards the abstract. Or someone like, you know, the opposite would be like a Gustave Doré or someone who tends to see life as a built up of, contoured description. So, I'm probably somewhere in the middle of that, but I tend to more see detail than simple shapes more than anything. But I work hard at finding those shapes. So it's something I'm aware of. So, but yeah, it has informed how I work, like that sculptural quality, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So is this something where, does it start as like a predisposition and turns into a skill? Is that, or is it something where it's just like, it's innate and I'm just aware that it's innate and I'm just, you know, just, responding to that? Does that make any sense that I just ask like a bunch of nonsense philosophical questions? What I'm trying to say is like for the young artist who's listening or the beginning artist who's listening, they're like, I don't know if I'm a detail person or a shape person. Is that something where, you know, you can kind of figure out, is that something you can figure out and then develop and hone that skill? Is that what you did?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's about having I think one of the big things about, you know, when you're a young artist, something to do is be somewhat self-aware of what you're doing so that, you know the correct paths to take your work. And it's sort of building up a certain objective quality to viewing your own work, which is really hard.
Yeah.
To me, it goes hand in hand with objectively being able to take good criticism. It's really difficult at first. And I still struggle with it. I still want to get angry sometimes when someone, you know, disses my work, even when it's the kindest thing they could possibly be doing.
Yeah.
And I think that self-awareness and knowing where to take your work is an integral part of, of developing as an artist. It also, you know, it'll let you know if you're drawing too much like someone else as well, or, you know, copying another style too closely. So you sort of, you develop this objective way of knowing, hey, this is the kind of work I do. I'm going to follow it. And I think that comes out of experimenting and being objective and playing a lot. So, you know, art is a playful thing. You got to play and then think about what you're doing at the same time. Does that make sense?
Well, you know, I think that's not an unfair thing to ask of a cartoonist, because we are making so many choices on every page anyway. If you can't multitask and also think about what you're doing while you're doing it, you're going to find yourself in trouble, you know. And I say think about what you're doing while you're doing it. Sometimes that happens in a very kind of gushy, fog-like way, right? It's not like you're not going, I am drawing a line right now, right?
Exactly. Don't edit while you're working, but, you know, have good judgment while you're working without editing. Editing should always be done afterwards. You take the stuff away afterwards, but you can just sort of be aware while you're working and like, oh, this is cool. I'm going to follow this. This, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's hard to talk about this stuff. It's, cause it's ephemeral. It gets away from me easy.
Well, and also it's so much, so at least from my own experience, it's a back and forth it's a back and forth process of being zoomed out and zoomed in, of being in this mindset and that mindset. And this is one of the reasons, years ago I did a podcast series called Your Comic from the Ground Up with Mark Rudolph on the Art and Story Podcast. And it was an attempt to try to create as of right now, this is how I understand how I make comics. But one of the things I had to keep disclaiming it, saying like, well, it's really not this linear, you know, you're zooming back and forth, and to try to turn it into a 6-part series is artificial, because the process of making a thing is not linear. You don't just do this step first and this step next and this step next and bingo, you got a comic and it's going to make $1 million. you know?
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, it's hard to talk about this stuff objectively because it happens in this sort of weird, all over the place, scattered way. You're never going to be, you know, no one, you know, I don't know. It's, you know, we're not architects. We're not, you know, we're not, it's comics happen in this sort of, it's playing and it's fun. So yeah. It's really hard to sort of say, do this, 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 and this, because it changes, you know? And I don't create the same way I did a year ago. So it's hard to sort of give advice on that level, but I keep trying.
Right. How do you give the 5 steps to playing a perfect basketball game? Or in your case, a game of hockey, right? or a game of curling. It's like, because each game is going to present its own unique variables to make a completely different game. You can't break it down into a linear thing. So, yeah, but it's fun to talk about. That's why we do, you know, this kind of stuff. Okay.
So much fun to talk about. Yeah, absolutely.
I want to talk a little bit about some of your explorations into selling and distributing Marrow Bones, because you've been posting a lot about different online fulfillment services, whether it's Big Cartel, which were some of the other ones you were posting about?
Gumroad, something junkie, eJunkie.
Yep. Indie Isle was another one that I was looking at.
That's right, Indie Isle.
Anything to report on those investigations that you've been doing?
Well, it seems like eJunkie might be the best way. With Marrow Bones 1, what I did was I set up a free account at Mediafire, and I had the, after you paid on PayPal, it redirected you to this download file. So you paid for it, and then you could just download this file, which is fine. It meant I didn't have to email everyone, but a quarter of the time, it was just too confusing and people would not get that link. And that's my fault. It's just, you know, it was an experiment and it kind of worked, but I want it to be even clearer next time. So I'm thinking eJunkie might be the way. I was looking at Gumroad, which looks really cool because it's about finding your readers in social media. So Twitter, Google+, Facebook, you know, you grab your readers right from there and it directs you to a download payment link from those places. The difficulty with Gumroad is they don't accept PayPal, which is 90% of my sales. But they're working on it. So hopefully down the road, that'll be a better option. eJunkie does take it. It just sort of does the same thing as I was doing with Mediafire, but it's less hassle. It's more direct. I don't have to worry about having to deal with downloads that didn't work because I'm paying a service. You know, I think it's $5 a month or something like that. I'm paying them to do it. One of the experiments with Marrow Bones 1 was to do a zero overhead thing. I paid no money to do Marrow Bones 1. The software and the hardware had already paid for itself through other projects. So I was just doing a PDF and selling it through free services. And with the money I made from that, I can afford to do, hopefully, paid services to make things a little smoother this time.
Cool. But yeah, the technology hasn't quite been sussed out for like these kind of out-of-the-box fulfillment services, has it? Because, I know what you're talking about with the Mediafire thing. When you go to a Mediafire download page, it is not 100% clear on what is actually the thing you're supposed to get, right? And ideally...
Exactly.
Ideally, the moment payment is processed, they would just, their download folder would suddenly jump up on the screen saying, hey, I got a thing in here for you, right?
That was my hope. You know, that's what ideally what I'd like. And I'm hoping eJunkie does a better job with that. You know, I mean, the Mediafire thing is almost like a MacGyver patch-up job. It's not really, it's not perfect, you know? It's a bit like sending someone to a Dropbox file or something. It's a little, I don't know.
A little bit of a hack.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit of a hack. So it's not set up for that specifically. So hopefully a startup or a company that is set up for that type of thing will do a better job of it.
I also want to talk a little bit about some of your experiments in where to host your work, because this is one of the reasons people should follow you on Twitter, InkyBat on Twitter. Go to your Google+ page if you're on Google+, Eric Orchard on there. Also on Facebook, because you share a lot of your investigations into your model of you know, how, what's the best place for this stuff. And so you were messing around with Tumblr, WordPress, and Blogspot. I mean, you were on Blogspot initially, and then you were also looking at these other two platforms. I'm wondering if you had any thoughts that you'd collected on what the differences between these different platforms from your standpoint, the kinds of books you're doing.
Well, I love Blogspot. I've been there since the beginning. It's sort of been my my home base for blogging. And I still think it's great, but the comments have gone down significantly, especially since the rise of Twitter, Facebook, Google+. So it's really no longer a place for the sort of guided conversations I used to have on my blog. It's become more of a place that is, you know, to put artwork, to share, but it's become one of many places. And the responses I get on my Blogspot blog are not significantly different from what I'm getting on Facebook or Twitter or Google+. So, you know, I'm keeping Blogspot. I love it, but it's not the sort of active place it once was 3 years ago, 2 years ago. Tumblr seems to be taking over to some degree in the whole because of the capability of easy sharing.
Yeah.
And I love it for that. I haven't really been doing a good job of keeping up on it. The great sort of the charm of Tumblr for me is sharing other people's work. It's just so much fun. You can just have this constant stream of stuff going through. And I'm feeling like my own work is getting lost in there because I'm just not sharing enough of my own work. I'm getting excited about other people's work. And it's like my home is filled with other people's work. I don't have any of my own work up. And I kind of treat Tumblr that way as well. But Tumblr is great for sharing that kind of stuff. Pinterest as well is another one. Mm-hmm. I haven't figured out a way to get Pinterest to send people back so they can actually buy my work. But it gets spread quickly, which is cool. So it's grown in awareness of my work. Twitter and Facebook still seem like the best places to share your work in a lot of ways. And Google Plus, I'm still getting the most sort of active people there. I really have no idea because everything I try keeps leading back to those social media sites.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been playing around with the idea of running a webcomic on Tumblr, but I haven't been updating it very regularly. I'm curious to see what will happen once I start doing that. But the logic seems solid that here's an active base of people who want to share images, and as long as you tag them well so that people discover them. And I messed around with this with a silly little crayon comic that I do, and some of them got shared a lot when I used the right keywords. And it's not that I'm trying to SEO anybody. It's just that there were sharks in this one, so anybody who likes sharks, maybe they'll like this one, you know? And it got passed around a lot, that kind of thing.
Yes.
But yeah, you're right. It's WordPress.com and Blogspot. It seems like the uptake of interactivity is kind of diminishing as there's all these other platforms for people to be able to zip around from your Facebook page to this other guy's Facebook page without actually leaving the platform, right?
Yeah. I think that's almost orchestrated by Facebook. Like, it's what they want. So network blogs or posting your images within Facebook, it's everything's kept within this little pool, which is kind of a shame, actually. It'd be nice if it was a bit more open. But, who knows where things are going? It changes all the time. So you just got to keep aware of everything and keep trying everything, you know? Yeah. It helps to be restless.
Well, and this is why, I think you've got the right idea by trying out everything because I just had a conversation with Casey Van Heise of wintersandlavelle.com about how Tumblr, in some areas of Tumblr, it's becoming a little bit of a 19-year-old's flame fest. You know, it's like this is the place where we go to scream about Cora fanfic, you know, and berate people and be mean to people or whatever. You know, it's like every community, you know, let's never forget MySpace, right? It's like in any moment, it could just flip like that in a second. So it's always a good idea to keep your ear to the ground. And as soon as a new thing starts, at least grab the username and then you can always cancel your account later on. But that sounds like work. Is it work?
No, because, you know, I'm a nerd. I carry around my iPad everywhere. I love this stuff. I love chatting with other creators all the time. I love being engaged by that. You know, I draw all the time. I'm always working. I make it all work. Like, it's fun. I don't really, some of it's time consuming. I mean, when I released Marrowbones 1, you know, I was emailing tons of people really, really hustling to get people to know what was out there. But, you know, for the most part, it becomes sort of, you know, muscle memory to tweet, you know?
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay. That would explain why I see you so much. I've been following you for going on 2 years now. And yeah, I'm never not reminded that you exist. Right. But it's not silly stuff like, oh, I'm eating a sandwich, you know, but it does range from, it's like Henry and I are, you know, watching Adventure Time and, you know, but then it'll be others like, here's another Marrow Bones preview, you know?
Yes. It's like I'm trying to keep people engaged with what I'm engaged with, which runs the gamut from being a dad and a husband to doing comic work, you know, to the business side. Yeah. And I'm really engaged with all that stuff. And I like to, and I'm fascinated with having this ongoing conversation with people and other people are engaged. And it's an important time in comics to be engaged with that stuff because, you know, as Mark Waid said in last episode, you know, it's a time for the first time in 50 years that the creators are in control of, you know, the production and how it's getting and the way it's being distributed. So I'm just super excited right now, and I think other people are. So you're just seeing a lot of excitement and engagement and discussion right now in comics.
Oh man, thank you for that. That is a perfect segue into a closing thought before we kick into book recommendations. You know, it's like people sometimes ask, I get the occasional email from somebody who says, yeah, Jersey, we all know comics are great. If that battle's been won, we don't need you to do this weekly show. At which point I say, well, then don't listen, because I'm having fun. But the other thing is that, you know, it's like we remember 1993 when comics were getting talked about in mass media, when that whole speculator boom came about. And then what happened? It fell apart, it crashed, and it was worse than it ever was. And I remember honestly having a conversation with a friend of mine as we were working on a published project. This would be around like 2000 or so. And he said, you know, I don't even know if there's going to be a comics industry in 5 years, you know? And I remember thinking, like, that, those words hit me really hard. Like, oh, that's terrifying. You know, there needs to be something. And at that time, you know, the internet was pretty new. I didn't know about webcomics yet. So, you know, it seemed like a really scary time. So here's what I was thinking. Now that the normals are talking about us again, and we have a voice in this conversation, let's put our best foot forward. Let's make sure that it doesn't, 1993 never happens again. Remember the Alamo, everybody? Let's not do this again. Let's do the best job we can to give a representation of this medium to the right people. And since we're the ones who actually get to say it and not necessarily the publishers and the, you know, the say it ain't so Joes, you know, maybe it'll be better this time. So that's my segue into, well, not a segue, but that's where I can turn to Sharon Iverson, one of the bridge conduits for between us and the normals. Sharon Iverson of the Ann Arbor District Library.
Nice to be here.
Oh,
to be compared to bridge parts and whatever.
you're our translator, our conduit, our medium. You're doing the seance to get us to be able to talk with the normal people who don't spend all day thinking about Pinterest and Facebook and storytelling. It's book recommendations time, Eric. So if you want to, I'll let Sharon start, and then we'll kick over to talking about the books. You said you might have some to talk about, too. And then when we close the book recommendations, Raina is going to announce the winner of the pre-pub copy of Drama.
Awesome.
So, okay. What do you got? What's up?
I didn't know who your guest was until just, you know, when you sent out the email. And
yeah.
I have a book that maybe fits in that kind of creepy, weird mode. It's Doug to Naple.
Oh.
And it's Bad Island.
Doug to Naple, always a win. Yeah. Here, do you want to
lay it right?
Yeah, they've got the camera monitor right there so
people
can see it. So you can open it up and look at the pages, and Matt will zoom in on it.
It's a fun story about a family who the dad is insistent that they're all going to bond together. The teen son, Reese, is like, Dad, I'll stay home, go to football practice. I promise that's all I'll do. And I won't get into trouble. But Dad says, nah, you're coming with us. And it ends up on this boat trip that, of course, the storm comes along and they crash on an island. And this island becomes a survival story for them that involves some really odd creatures and things that they keep discovering, some of which might help them survive and some of it which might bring them to their doom.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and so, of course, and there's what you find out, there's another story from another part of the universe involved in Bat Island. Mm-hmm. So that's a fun book to check out. The other book I have is actually kind of weird, but in a historically real sense. You know me, I like nonfiction, and this is The Lives of Sacco and Vanzetti. And I don't know if we're...
Is that even going to show on the screen when we need to lift it up? Yeah, there you go.
Like
we got that.
So, it's basically the story of what happened in the events that led to the trial of Sacco and Vanzetti, two Italian anarchists back in the 1920s, and involving the murder of some in a bank heist, or actually money heist. Two guards are killed, and these two men become the accused in the crime. And as a result, you find out about the most interesting court system in Massachusetts at the time. The judge who has some issues with the whole anarchist movement is pretty much convinced that these guys are going to be convicted. And so... As the Rick Geary presents the book, it's pretty much a situation of the reality of presenting the facts. And what's cool is, as he does, he'll give you the layout of what happened. So it's sort of like you get to decide, are these guys guilty? Are they criminals? Or are they actually victims of, at that time, the American trial system.
Wow, sounds pretty thought-provoking. So yeah. Who published this? This is ABA.
Good question.
Yeah, I just want to, because this is, I've not seen this before. Nantir Beal, oh boy, Minaustishin. Comics Lit is an imprint and trademark of ABM. So yeah, so that is the Lives of Sacco and Vanzetti by Rick Geary.
He does all these murder crime things, brings them that are kind of from the early 20th century, and they're all black and white, but that kind of lends itself to the, yep, you know, the historical bit. And you, in particularly in this one, I've read some of his other stuff, but in this one, you know, you kind of, he tries to be the presenter of the facts, you know, here are the facts, ma'am. And you decide, is this in fact?
Eli's in the chat and he's saying, Eli Nyberger, Ulotricus on Twitter, everybody. he says that's the same publisher for all of Rick Geary's Treasury of Victorian Murders, which I believe we talked about on the show before. If not, Eli, it was you. But yeah. Okay. So cool.
So very cool.
Awesome.
Those are
books.
My two.
Okay. Eric, do you want to go next before I do mine?
Yeah, sure. That's my favorite Rick Geary book, by the way. I love that one. It's so good. Those historical murder ones are so compelling. Like you start them and you can't put them down, and they're so beautifully drawn.
Mm-hmm.
Great choices, both. I'm going to try to share some stuff that maybe people don't know that well, or they do and they want to know better. This one, The Happy Undertaker, is so good. It's by a Toronto cartoonist, Drazen Kozjan, and there are these creepy little comics he does that are all silent and just beautifully drawn. You know, all like just the art is just wonderful. He's one of the best artists working in comics. They're very funny, you know, a little dark. Another page, just like just wonderful stuff. And this one just launched at TCAF this year, which is called Happy Undertaker 13 Cursed Souls, which is basically you go through and there's 13 different people with weird curses that has made them ugly. It's just wonderful. And you can find Drazen stuff at drazenkozjan.com. And the other one I wanted to share that people might know is Jonsfar and Louis Trondheim's Dungeon.
Oh, God, so, yes, yes.
Can't get enough of this. I could read this 100 times a day, still be happy. One of my Desert Island comics. And finally, The Storm in the Barn by Matt Phelan. Always a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
Great, beautiful stuff. Mm-hmm. More comic people should be reading this. I think it's more of a, you know, bookstore library book, and I want to see more in the comic people, you know, the comic culture get into Matt Phelan stuff, because it's gorgeous. He's an amazing storyteller. He deserves to be as widely read as possible. On my iPad, I also had open Adventure Time, the comic, which I'm just addicted to, but my iPad died, so you'll have to imagine it.
Now, that's done by Ryan North, yes?
Yes, it is, with a variety of artists, some great people working on it. It's it's sort of like the Bongo Simpson comics in that it's quality in and of itself. It's a joy to read. Mm-hmm. It's great for all ages. I just love it.
And Chris Houghton, Michigan expat, did the covers on those. Chris Houghton of Reed Gunther, which is another webcom or not another comic that people should read if you haven't. But I don't have that with me today.
Reed Gunther, yeah.
Reed Gunther is great. Okay, my recommendation is a guy that everybody's been talking about lately, Mr. Tony Cliff. Did you want to borrow this?
Well, sure, but, you know, we're going to get him for...
the Comic Artist Forum.
Yes, Comic Artist Forum.
November? September?
No, it's October.
Oh, hey, Raina. Raina just showed up, and you might want to mute your live stream, Raina.
Muted him.
There we go. Yes. Thank you. Because we were coming down the speakers.
Raina just showed up, and you might want to mute your live stream, Raina.
And I'm still hearing it. Okay. You there, Raina?
There we go. Yes. Thank you. Because we were coming down the speakers.
It's still doubling up, Raina, so you're listening to the live stream someplace. Okay. No, it's still looping around. Hey, Raina, we're going to have to call you back. Because all we're hearing is my audio looping around. I'm going to take the mouse away from you, Matt, just for a second so I can hang. There we go. Oh, I got the mouse upside down. This is great audio for everybody after the fact, but there we go. So, Eric, are you still there? Yeah, there's Eric. Oh. And now I got to unmute that. Or call Eric back. Minor technical difficulty because we were trying something new today, but it was all my fault, everybody. It has nothing to do with Matt. So, okay, so while we get Eric back in the chat, so I want to talk about this guy, mm-hmm. Tony Cliff, who's going to mm-hmm. be at the Ann Arbor District Library. Mm-hmm. Of DelilahDirk.com. This is Delilah Dirk and the Turkish Lieutenant is a webcomic that you can go check out at DelilahDirk.com. And he just did this collection, this short collection of Delilah Dirk and the Seeds of Good Fortune, which is a print collection you can get at DelilahDirk.com. It is a new story. It's in black and white. It is gorgeous.
Yes.
And we were talking on the Twitters the other day with Tony, Tango Charlie on Twitter or Delilah Dirk on Twitter, about how... I think it was Dave Roman was talking about getting together with some other cartoonist and reading this work and crying because it's so good. And it's so good it makes us feel bad. But you can get this book. I got this book for like $5. So,
wow.
I mean, that's a steal for some of this quality. But I can open it up and show it to you guys. You guys have heard me talk about Tony before. But yeah, check out this awesome Family Circus-esque action sequence.
Mm-hmm.
But yes. So, okay, Raina, are you there?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
All right.
So, are you ready to announce the... Okay, so we're going to do... That was my book recommendation, was DelilahDirk.com. Now we're going to talk about drama. We're going to talk about the Who Gets the Pre-Pub book. A lot of people seem to have tweeted the hashtag, thank goodness. And some of them said some nice things about you, like I asked. So, I appreciate that, everybody.
Yeah, thanks, you guys. So, are we ready?
Okay, Raina Telgemeier of GoRaina.com of drama. You are going to announce the winner who's going to get the pre-pub copy. Let us know.
The winner is Michelle Kondrich, or Kondrick, of @MissIllustrator on Twitter. Congratulations, Michelle.
So what does she need to do?
I'm going to get in touch with her, but she can email me her mailing address, and I will send that to her via Twitter. Yay! Thanks for entering, everybody.
Thanks, everybody, for supporting this book. Don't worry if you didn't win. It's coming out in September. And, you know, if you come to Kids Read Comics this summer, kidsreadcomics.org, Raina's going to be there. And you can harangue her to maybe look at a pre-pub copy that might be sitting around on the table, yeah?
Yeah.
I'll bring mine, just in case. But Raina, it's an amazing book, and congratulations on it. I cannot wait for this book to come out in September. And thanks for being
September 1st. Scholastic Graphics is the pub.
Cool. All right. Well, we'll let you go, and we'll. But everybody can follow you at GoRaina on Twitter, and GoRaina.com is the website. And thanks again, Raina, for being a part of the ending of this episode.
No problem.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. All right, let's try to get Eric back in here to close this out. Hang up on Raina, and let's hit play on the Eric one. And I'll just call him back. How about that? If it'll let me. So while we're getting Eric back on, oh, there he is. Eric? Sorry about that. We had some Skype malfunctions. Not quite as dramatic as Janet Jackson's, but you know, it stopped the show. Is that a little bit of too old of a joke? I think it was a little dated. We're going to do announcements about events going on at AADL, and then we'll close out. So there's something exciting coming around the bend this weekend, Sharon Iverson.
That would be Janie Ho is going to come back and share with us Adobe Illustrator, a tool that a lot of comics artists use. She also is a children's book illustrator, and pretty much that is her main tool. So we'll get to see what that's all about and enjoy it.
Yes, Janie Ho of ChickenGirlDesign.com,
yep.
Celebrated kids illustrator, draws entirely in Adobe Illustrator. She's been on the show a couple times before. She did a demo of how she draws in Adobe Illustrator, and it was perplexing to me. It was watching somebody speak in another language, and I'm so excited that the Ann Arbor District Library is going to put on, facilitate Adobe Illustrator's workshop thing at the Ann Arbor Comics Artist Forum. So that's the last one of the year or of the summer.
So it's this Sunday, June 3rd, 1 to 3. And it will kind of shift into summer mode after Janie's presentation.
And we got lots of comics classes coming up this summer. So but that will be the last Comics Artist Forum until the fall. And then in the fall, we've got Tony Cliff coming to do a presentation for us. Did Casey
is coming in December.
Casey Van Heist of WintersLavelle.com. Awesome.
We have James Anderson in September. I think I've got this straight now in my head.
Oh, wow. But man. So lots more comic stuff going on at AADL, including July. July 7th and 8th this year, kidsreadcomics.org is going to be happening at the Ann Arbor District Library. The guest list has been posted, and as a matter of fact, Eric, some of the people you were talking about earlier are actually going to be here. Jay Torres is going to be at the show. Jack Briglio, is that how you say his last name? I don't want to butcher it too bad.
Briglio, I'm not sure.
But yeah, he's going to be there. Dave Roman and Raina Telgemeier are going to be there at the Kids Read Comics. And what is it, if you haven't heard of this yet, it's a two-day event. Actually, it's three if you count Friday night, because we got a kickoff event Friday night. A two-day free to the public, free to attend, free for artists to table, and all day long, every hour, there's going to be two to three different free comics workshops going on, whether it's learning how to draw in Adobe Illustrator with Janie Ho. Pardon me. We're going to have drawing workshops, character drawing workshops. Chris Houghton's coming to do a How to Draw Adventure Time Characters workshop. So tons and tons and tons of fun, and the big idea is to advocate for comics by getting kids excited about comics through making comics, not just let's meet the hero and get the thing signed, but let's participate in something. How awesome would it have been, Eric, when you were a kid, to be able to walk right up to, say, Tim Burton and be able to draw next to the guy, right?
Amazing.
Exactly. That'd be something that would transform you forever. So that's what we're trying to achieve with this. And I hope, Eric, we can get you to come next year with your print versions of Marrowbones.
I would love to. And Maddie Kettle will be out as well. So.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
So is there anything else besides Marrowbones that you wanted to give a shout out to today, Eric?
Gosh. You know, I mean, those are my, you know, Marrowbones and Maddie Kettle are my two main projects. And I'm working on a top secret project with Tom Snagorski, who wrote some of the Bone novels and Hellboy novel. And, you know, we're working on a little children's something with him as well, which I'm not sure how much I should talk about yet, but that's really exciting. And I'm working on that right now.
Oh, very, very cool. Okay, well, then we'll just have to watch you on Twitter, Inky Bat on Twitter, to find out more about that. And we'll have to get you back for some more talk on this stuff, because I didn't get through everything I wanted to cover today.
I didn't say everything I wanted to say, but man, what an honor. This is my favorite podcast.
Aww.
I'm so happy to be here.
Look at this guy. He knows how to treat a host. And this is where I can say, this is a good reminder to everybody. If anybody who thought this stuff was good and compelling and more people should listen to it, a great way to support it would be, because you don't have to give me money or anything, you just go to iTunes and give a star review to the show. And that's the number one way people find new podcasts. Or you could tweet a link, but I'm saying this is a nice anonymous way. Just give a star review, and then boom, it pushes us up the ranks, and more people will discover the show, and then it'll help out me. It'll also help out guys like Eric, because it'll bring him to more people, right? Mm-hmm. And look at the guy. You want to help that guy, right? He's got that honest face, that honest, sweet Canadian face. And it helps comics. That's why we do this thing, and that's why we record this show every other week at the Ann Arbor District Library. Comics.aadl.org is where you can find the video podcast for the show. It's also on YouTube, and this archived episode will be available at comicsaregreat.com/CAG. What is this, 57? Mm-hmm. CAG 57. Holy moly. Okay, well, thank you, Sharon Iverson of the Ann Arbor District Library. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Eric Orchard of ericorchard.blogspot.com. And thank you to Matt Dubay, Tom Smith, and Eric Closter of the Ann Arbor District Library and the Ann Arbor District Library proper for putting on this show every other week. And until then, I have been Jersey Drozd of comicsaregreat.com. Oh, thanks to Raina and Jersey on Twitter. Okay, bye.